half an hour.
Just thanks, everybody. I'm Edwina, and I'm a very grateful addict. And I just wanted to bring my timer up because I tend to go over always. But no, it's good to be here. I'm actually a little bit nervous. And I always get nervous when I'm asked to do a share, like, because I always try to share from my heart and be vulnerable and open and honest. And to be that comes a little bit of fear, like, but I know I'm amongst like-minded people, like, and I'll be okay, like, once I can just acknowledge, I suppose, and step into. And I'd like to thank the convention committee for asking me to share. They asked me over a year ago, so all the last day or two I was like, I can't get out of it, like, I've agreed to this over a year ago, like. And I suppose that's one of the things I've been taught since I came into CA, was just to, if I was asked to do anything in service, to say yes. And I have to say, like, that it's something I've always stood by over the last, I'm almost 6 years clean, and for the last 6 years, Aunt and I've been asked to do in fellowship. I've said yes, and it has opened up so many doors for me, like. And I suppose, like, you learn when you come in here that I didn't know what was best for my life, like. And then I come in here and I just start saying yes, and my life has got better, like. And you know, I'm here to share my experience, strength and hope. And I was saying my prayers in the toilet 10 minutes ago on my knees. I always do that. I used to use a lot in toilets, and I pray a lot in them now. But and my little prayer was just, you know, God, please remove me fears, like, just so I can hit one person, maybe one newcomer in the room, that they might identify and come back, like. And I think, like most people, like, well, I don't know, it's like most people, but for me, like, my hope, like, to carry is for someone to believe that there is actually a power out there that can help you, like. I didn't think that was possible when I came in here. I didn't understand it, like, and I can stand here today, a recovered woman, like, from that seamlessly hopeless state of mind and body, and say, I absolutely believe in God, like, I absolutely believe that God has restored me, like, and restored me life, or gave me a life. And I had the obsession to use and drink has been removed, like, and that's what I came in, I suppose, forced for, like. And, you know, it started, like, what it was like for me growing up, when the progression and all that kind of stuff. And for me, I grew up in an alcoholic home. I thought that's what made me an alcoholic and a drug addict. And but, like, certainly the behaviours contribute, like, but not to becoming one, like, but to that male adjusted to life stuff, like. And you know, I grew up in a very fear-based home, but I didn't know I was fearful till I came to CA, like, and start understanding that, like, because I thought I was, like, that tough kind of street kid. Like, we grew up in a really rough area, like, and drugs and drink were rampant and everybody was taking them. And it wasn't, like, by the time I was 9 or 10, I had drank, and by the time I was 12 or 13, had smoked heroin and had tried everything else in between, like. So that kind of seemed normal, you know, that seemed normal for me. And people can remember the effects it had on them, their first drink or their first drug. I don't, like, I was just a baby, like, I really was, like. And but I know I liked it, and I know I kept going back for more, like. And you know, when I suppose I went up through the years like that, I was going to school and work or whatever I was doing as a little teenager, like. But me weeks were always revolved around the weekends, getting, wanting, use and all that kind of stuff, like. And you know, it's funny, like, I've a couple of other sisters who are addicts as well, like. And, like, their lives just went straight into, like, homelessness, you know what I mean? But I suppose for this control freak, like, I, like, try to micromanage for a long time, like. And so I wanted to go to school, I wanted to do certain things. There was a part in me that genuinely didn't want to be using drugs, and I wanted something better, like. I knew within, not that it was wrong, like, but that there was something else, I suppose. And but anyway, I went up through my years like that, and loads of stuff happens, like. And you hear it, like, I had, like, there's loads of trauma was talking about it with Jason even beforehand, like there's loads of trauma that happened that I thought that's what contributed. And like I would have used a lot on all that stuff. Like, so there was the abuse and the sexual abuse, and by the time I was a teenager, me dad had committed suicide. He was one of us, and like loads of traumatic experiences. But I suppose I kind of loved it. I liked that there was loads of trauma and drama in my life, like, because it just, I suppose, made for like more using and drinking and more. I can't even put the word in it, but I liked being in the thick of the drama. And when drama happened in my house, the first thing everybody done was drink or take drugs or whatever. So it was acceptable, and that's how we coped. So if I remember even being at my dad's funeral, I was only 15, and my ma saying to me, have a few drinks, like, you'll be all right, like, calm your nerves or whatever. And that's how, you know, she done the best she could. I heard something coming over on the plane. And I've heard it loads of times, but I suppose I really heard it coming over this morning on the flight. Like, and she wasn't the mother that I wanted her to be, but she was the mother that I needed to be to make me the woman I am today. Like, and I really believe that. Like, you know what I mean? I really know the woman done the best she could. I love her. Like, and I know it has her mothering skills and the way I was reared and all my past has shaped me into a woman I am today, who I actually can accept and like and look in the mirror and not be in that place where I used to be. But anyway, that was going on through the teenage years. So by the time I was 18 or 19, I was strung out to bits. I was using every day. You know, the progression had well kicked in for me at 16 or 17. Most of the time I hadn't got money to use. I'd be sick, like, or whatever. But by the time I was 19, I had definitely reached a place where I just could not cope with normal social situations. Like, so if something happened to me, I just could not cope. Like, and I found myself in a situation with family members, and I was rejected in the conversation. It's something really simple now, like, but at the time I didn't know how to accept it. Like, and I've come to realize in recovery that everything passes. Like, every feeling you're going through passes. But I did not know that growing up. So when I experienced pain or rejection, it was so intense that, like, my reaction to that was to fuck myself over a bridge into a river and try and die, like, because I couldn't bear it, like, you know what I mean? And when I got dragged out of that, and I always mention it because I remember they put me into the psych ward, like, and they were trying to label me and all, like, saying she's depressed, she's like her father. And I knew then, I was only 19, like, and I knew I had a little moment, I suppose, where I knew deep down within me that I was not depressed. I knew it, like, I knew there was something much deeper wrong with me, like, and I knew that drugs definitely had a part in it, like, and they said, like, you know, we'll describe you this, that, and everything else, because that's what they do, like, with our symptoms. I know there's a lot of people suffer with depression, but I knew I wasn't depressed, like, and they prescribed me loads of meds anyway, and we loved that. And I remember leaving, like, and he said to me, they kept me in for a while, like, and they said, like, it'll take 6 weeks for them to kick in, like, and I was thinking, oh, fuck that, like, I have 6 weeks to wait around, and left the mental hospital and went straight away and scored, like, and I suppose that's just the way it was, like, and a couple of months after that episode, I met a man, and I thought, right, Grant, he lived 100 miles outside of Dublin. I'm from Dublin. And he lived 100 miles away. And I, like, thought, okay, he's going to fix me. I didn't think that like that, but that's what it was like. And I thought, if I move down away from Dublin with him, I'll be able to get clean. He's not a drug addict. I'll be able to drink like a lady and bake bread and have babies. And, like, I was so fucking delusional. Like, and he lived on a farm, like, real naive country man, like, really, like, not the type of man I had grew up around, like, and he'd never even smoked a joint, like, and he was in his 20s, like, and that was soon to change, but when he met me, but, you know, I went anyway, and I genuinely do, and I look back, like, I did love the man, like, I loved him the best I could, like, you know what I mean, but the shine of that relationship wore quickly, like, and even though we lasted in a marriage for 12 years, but that's down to him, really. But we, I moved down, like, and it's funny, like, we're nearly 6 years separated, like, and I still get emotional when I talk about him, like, and they say, that tears are healing. Like, so I always mention him, like, he's a big part of my life. Like, but I moved down anyway, and it kept me clean, because my idea of being clean was off a certain type of drug. Like, so for me, I was a heroin addict, so to be clean, that was okay. But it was okay for me to do coke at the weekends and drink and take tablets and maybe have a few drinks during the week. So that was me being clean, like. And you know, eventually everything catches up, like, and the progression of all that, and the drink was a big one for me as well. And I thought, if I have a baby, I'll have a baby that will definitely fix me. Like, and my ma had done such a terrible job on us. My ma had 7 girls. She'd done such a terrible job on all of us that thought he was talking to me. No. Sorry. And that I would become a mother, and maybe then I would feel that love or that connection that I was searching for. I didn't know it was a connection, didn't know what it was like, but you know, when you come around here then you realise that's what it was like. And I had my first daughter, Ella, and by the time she was 2, I was told, you need to get your shit together and go to treatment and get clean, like. And you know, loads of stuff had happened in between, like, and I know I've only a half hour to share, like, so I went into that first treatment centre, and I had a real, like, desire to get better. I knew I was sick, like, and I had a real desire to someone to, like, counsel me and mind me and tell me I had such a terrible childhood, like, and so many bad things has happened. No wonder I do what I do, like, and all that kind of stuff. And I was introduced to fellowship there. It was an OCA, and I stayed there for 28 days or whatever it was, and I start going to meetings after it, like, and I liked the meetings for a little while. Never heard any message. I like to say, like, I probably wasn't able to hear, like, but there was definitely no big books or anyone talking about, you know, how to recover. Like, there's a lot of people talking about their problems and stuff like that. So done that for a little while, left the treatment centre, but I had a reservation, I suppose, around alcohol. I did not want to, like, let go of alcohol. I didn't see that being a problem, like, and I left anyway and got pregnant on my second daughter, because, you know, I'd definitely try to be a better mother this time around, like. And I picked up when I was 3 months pregnant on Horn. That relapse lasted me 6 years. And I was in and out, trying desperately to stop, like, and never knew anything about mental obsessions and physical allergies or none of that, like, you know. And I used through my first pregnancy as well, and I shared that, like, as well for, like, any new women that are in the room, because I know that that kind of shame kept me for a long time coming back in. When I was in that 6-year relapse, like, I was like, I can't tell people what I was doing when I was pregnant on Lucy, and I had my 3-year-old daughter in the back of the car, and I was using in the front of the car, like, and telling her to sit fucking down, like, you know, my mum's not doing anything, like, sit down, like. And any mother that has used with their babies knows, or any fathers for that matter, like, I'm sure it's just the same feeling, like, but it's definitely not the mother I had set out to be, like. And I did not know that I was up against a disease so much more powerful than my maternal instincts that I didn't know how to stop, like, you know what I mean? It's quite sad, like, to be in a room for 6 years and not know that. I didn't know that. I was going to meetings for fucking 6 years, like, I never heard that, like. And I had heard a CA fellowship, and I was so closed-minded to it. I was so closed-minded to CA, because I suppose I didn't understand it, and anything I didn't understand, I thought was a load of shit. I was like, no. And but really what was behind it was the fear. And it's the same fear that can cripple me today or any other day, that I'm not good enough for that fellowship, like, that they would not want me in there because I'm not a cocaine addict and I wouldn't be accepted. So that's the real reason why I didn't come, like. And I thought they would all think they were better than me and I'd be this or whatever, but you know, so that was going on. So in those few years, like, all the things that, like, I had heard would happen, you know, all the things, the stories you hear happened to me. And I'm really grateful that it did only take 6 years for it to all happen, like, and that it brought me to a place of surrendering to my knees, like. And, you know, my husband eventually left, like, and cut social services involved, removed the kids. I'd crashed the cars, done all that. I had ended up in a coma with 2 collapsed lungs and came out of that a week later with I thought that would be a good idea to get the drug dealer to come up and use while I'm in the hospital, because if anything would happen, I was in a safe place. You know what I mean? And like, not even real, you know what I mean? And you know, and I remember like the month even Matthew, that's my ex, we have a really good relationship today, but I remember when he, just before he was leaving, like a couple of months before, like, and he was like, I'd never seen the man cry before, like, and he was crying in the bedroom, please stop, I cannot watch you die anymore. I was about 6.5 stone, please stop. And in my heart, I was like, I promise you, I'm done. I'm so fucking done. I was so done anyway. I was done for years, like. But in my mind thinking, will he ever just fuck off out of the gaff so I can score? You know what I mean? It's horrible. That's complete hopelessness, like. And that fraught emotional appeal, like, just wasn't enough, like. And, you know, eventually I was left in a place and where I didn't have anybody around me, like. And I had a moment, I was actually had the kids this particular morning. I woke up and I was dying sick. And for the whole last year of me using, I was like, I have to tell this story because it's just so mental. The whole last year of me using, I was living in Tipperary, as I said, which is a 2-hour drive from Dublin. And you could buy drugs there, but they wouldn't be great quality drugs. You'd really have to be driving to Dublin for any good quality drugs in Ireland. Like, and I used to get into the car every day and drive a 2-hour drive to Dublin. I was on a fiddle now with a bit of money, so it was okay, but I used to drive 2 hours to Dublin, score enough drugs just for that day, and drive 2 hours back. And I would only buy enough for that day because I swore that tomorrow I was gonna stop, and I really meant it, and I really wanted to, like. And I'd done that for nearly a year, like over 10 months anyway, and the madness of it, like, sometimes I might go, ah, fuck, I'll just get one for tomorrow, like. But anyway, this particular morning I woke up, the usual, like, dying sick, not able to move out of the bed, asking me, little Ella at the time, like, you know, take Lucy downstairs, I'll be down in a few minutes, like, horrendous, like, it's not who I am, like, I'm jump up person, like, I like to be, but just not even having any power in me to get myself out of the bed and get dressed, like. And then the thought would come in, just get to Dublin, get something. And so back on that wagon again. And this particular morning, I was screaming at the kids. It was a February morning. It was really cold. And I was just like, that Sergeant Major, my dad was the same as me, just that real restless, real irritable. And just like, get fucking, I hate cursing, like, but this is the way I was. Like, that's what I was saying to me little babies, like, get dressed and just get out the door. And like, dumping them off on somebody so I could just go and use, like. And I remember that day, like, driving away, like, and Lucy, my little one, was in a woman's house looking out the window at me. And I hope I never forget that, actually, day. But I just thought, you're so fucking useless. That was the feeling, like, you are just so useless. Like, and I was driving away and I was thinking, like, just get up and get the drugs, get them into you, and go home and sit with your kids and just be there with them. Because that's all I wanted, like. I just wanted to be part of my own little family, like, and I was not able to be, like, in such a painful place to be in. And so drove up to Dublin, I scored. I was laughing at this earlier, like, it's so funny, like, you know, when I used to score, like, I'd be dying sick, and I'd only see our man coming towards the car. He might leave me waiting a while, and I'd ring him threatening him, saying, I'm here 2 hours, you better hurry up or I'm leaving. And he'd be like, go on, so. And then I'd start crying, going, no, I'll wait, I'll wait. But, or I'd see him coming, and all of a sudden, Jason, I was saying that to you earlier, all of a sudden, like, I'm not that dying sick anymore. I have a little pep, like, you know what I mean? Before I even put the substance into my body, like, I'm feeling a bit better. And I need to, like, probably vomit or something to clear out my insides. And that would all just happen by just seeing somebody walking towards me with the bag, like, before you even put the substance in, like. And that'll tell you how much of a mind power disease it is. But that particular day I was using, and it I suppose it didn't work, like. But whatever happened, I had a moment, and I was on my own, and I thought, I suppose, I don't know if it was a voice or if it's something inside or if something happens, but what came to me was that feeling that I just had when I left the kids of uselessness. I felt so useless on the planet that I was no good to anybody, no good as a mother, a daughter, a friend, a sister, a wife, nothing. And then the next thought was like, But like, if you're the problem, like, or if maybe it's not everybody else that you've been blaming, because I'd been blaming my ex for leaving and my ma for the way she was and my dad and everybody else, and you know, maybe you are the problem. So from that moment, it was a February moment, I didn't get into treatment until the April, into a detox unit, but something changed, and I suppose I had a brokenness and a surrender, like, and I knew I was the problem, and I knew that something was going to have to change within me, and everything changed from that moment. It's so funny, when you become broken enough around here, or in a place of surrender, where you know that you can no longer, like, control and do this stuff anymore, opportunity presents itself everywhere. It's already there, like, but I was just so closed off, I couldn't see it, like, and somebody sponsored me to go into a treatment center. I had nothing to go in there. They paid for it. And I asked her woman later on, why did she do that? Because you're only allowed one person from their area a year to do it. And she said, I saw the want in you. I saw the willingness and the brokenness. And while I was in there, CA came in. Like, so for anyone doing any H&I services, I try always get involved in that as well, because that's how I heard the message. In CA, it was compulsory. I had to go, no matter what my little fear was of being judged. And from the very first meeting I went to now, which is 5 years, 10 months ago, I got hope. I got a sponsor. She shared at that very first meeting. She stayed my sponsor for about 6 months. She took me through the process of the steps. She lived a 2-hour drive away from me. I remember asking her to sponsor me when I got out, and she said, yeah, come up to me twice a week. And I was thinking, do you want me to drive up twice a week? Can we not just do it once? And she said, did you not tell me you drove up every day to buy drugs? But yet, like, I had a problem with that, like, you know what I mean? But I didn't really have a problem with it. I'd done it, and I always have done anything, that any direction I've been given in here by any good women, I have always taken. And I suppose that's one of the good things that I thankfully have kept, like, that I've remain somewhat teachable or whatever. But anyway, because I know I've only a few minutes, and I just wanted to touch on one or two little things of, like, what happened going through that for me. I always had believed in God. I was like, I grew up like in a religious kind of environment. I'm not that religious of a person. I don't follow any particular religion, but I always believed in something. And I like all religions, actually. But anyway, that's completely different. But it wasn't hard for me to believe in a God. I definitely could come to that, like. But I suppose I could never feel it, like. I could never feel what was really on offer, like. And if you stay around here long enough and ask enough, and God killing would if he was sought, like, oh my God, if I didn't just nearly get God knocking on the door to tell me he was in my life, I don't know what was next, like. But one of the big things, I suppose, in my story is when I got to step 12, that's lady that took me through, who was almost 7 years in sobriety at the time, was drinking. She started drinking, and she told me she started drinking, so I said, okay, I think I'll get a new sponsor, which was grand, like. But something happened anyway going through the steps of her, even though she's, I don't know how long she was drinking for, but like, God is so much more powerful than another person, you know what I mean, that the book opened up to me anyway, and I had heard something by going through the process. But anyway, I got another sponsor, who's still my sponsor today. A lot of people know her here. Ash is her name, Ashlyn. But we became very good friends. She took me through the process. I started sponsoring a lot of other women. I was living 2 hours outside of Dublin, as I was saying. And I used to drive up every week to do a service commitment in CA in my home group, and to sponsor women. I used, because there was no women around where I was, like, so I was going to AA fellowship, and I started sponsoring women in AA, and I was driving up and down to Dublin, and that's why I do laugh when some people say, I'm not going to go to the meeting tonight because it's raining, or to get the bus or whatever, and I used to laugh, and like, because I would have walked to any meeting, like, and but anyway, that was just how desperate I was for recovery, I suppose. But we eventually actually opened 2 meetings in that Tipperary, and it's funny, like, because I didn't want to stay in Tipperary, and I was court ordered that I couldn't remove the kids if I got the kids back, that I couldn't remove them until they were finished school, which is not for another 8 years. But anyway, 6 down, 8 to go. But I realised God had a plan, like, you know what I mean, that he had a plan. And the few women that I was sponsoring in AA, a couple of us opened up the first CA meeting there, I think 4 years ago. And that's a home group on a Tuesday night, and there's over 30 members go to that group, like. And we've another one on a Friday, and now we just opened another one on a Thursday just outside of Tipperary in Limerick, like, and which is 25 minutes away, like. And so, like, CA is growing around, like, and I see God, like, had a little plan, and whatever to keep me down there. But the new sponsor I got, as I was saying, her name was Aislinn, and when her and I were going through the process of the steps, we discussed everything. But it's funny how like certain stuff pops out or is revealed, because we seem to miss a little bit. And what actually happened was, about 3 years ago, one of my sisters, I have two homeless, well, one's dead, but one of my homeless sisters at the time was just after getting out of prison. She was after doing a 10-year manslaughter sentence. And she had just got out of prison, and me sponsor rings me. And she said, oh, we were in town today, and Anthony, who's her partner, who's also in recovery, actually, and he just, I always say this just out of respect, like, but he gives me full permission to share this story, and I do him, he shares it too, like, but, well, it's not really my story, he can share if he wants, but his father and my sister had been going out, and my sister was got a 10-year sentence for murdering him, and we never knew that. And I had been in their home for 2 years, and she had taken me through the steps, and I was sitting with him minding his children, and it never came up that it was actually my sister and his father that had been living together in a drunken result, him ending up dead, and her ended up doing a 10-year sentence, like. And I suppose I always touch on the story because I really believe God brought us together for many reasons, like. And one of them being, then fast forward a year later, which was 2 years ago, and Tanya, that's my sister, was dying. And she came up off the streets and rang and said, could she come home? We said, yeah, we'd let her go to the hospital. She had liver failure, loads of other stuff going on. She was only 39, and mad alcoholic, like gas, like mad, like, and like most of us. But so I stayed up in Dublin, and I nursed her for the last couple of weeks, like, and I was minding her and talking to her, and like, really, as a direct result of the fellowship, because I resented her for so many years, like, I hated her. Well, I didn't really hate her, but I thought I did. But anyway, I suppose CA taught me then how to dress up, shut up, and show up, like, and be some loving to her. Like, I really was able to be loving to her, like. But anyway, so I suppose I wanted to mention as well, like, that when she was dying that week, the last week of her dying, I remember saying to her, like, she was really afraid, like, really afraid, like. And I said to her, what's it? And she said, I think I'm gonna go to hell for what I've done. And I just meditated for, like, I was trying to console her in some way, if you like. And I was saying to her, this isn't your fault, love. This is the drink. Like, this is what the drink done to you. And she's still on her deathbed, the level of denial, like, for the drink, the alcoholic. She said, this has nothing to do with drink. I'm dying because of what happened to me as a kid, or childhood. That's why I'm dying. She was still blaming, still defending the drink till the very last moment, defended it right up to her last breath, like. And I just thought, wow, like, how lucky are we when we come in here and we get a bang of, like, what we actually suffer with, and then we get to, like, clear away that wreckage and make amends for, like, what we've done, like. And to not be lying on my deathbed with crippled with fear of the stuff I've done, because I've had a lot of stuff that I've done that I would not like to be taken with me, like. And you know, fast forward to the last day her life, like, she just wouldn't let go. She was so afraid, like, terrified. And Aislinn rang me, like, and she'd been ringing me every day anyway, like. And she rang this particular day and said, how's things there? I said, she's so afraid, she can't let go. And she said, Anthony wants to know, can he come up and sit with her? I get so emotional telling it, because I only ever tell it at a convention, like, or when I have somewhere big to share. And I said, we would love that, like. And like, Anthony, I have to, like, what a man, like, what a demonstration of the program. So he come up and sat with her, like, and said to her, I forgive you. I forgive you for what you've done, like,
because of my own father's death and me seeing him dying in them conditions, something awoke in my spirit to push me into recovery. And she died about 2 hours later. And like, I kind of cry with a bit of gratitude as well. Like, you know, some people like say like, oh, it's terrible that she died. Like, I kind of was glad to see her death come. Like, she was a tortured alcoholic. Like, and she was one of those people that just obviously wasn't going to get it. Like, you know what I mean? And no matter how much I tried to force it on her, like, but it's just such a beautiful program that we get to live, like, and get to witness, like, and I suppose it was another part of my journey and my life that, like, I felt God was really knew what was best for me, like, because actually I would never have asked Ash to be my sponsor because I had too many judgments on the woman. And that's the truth, because judgments will separate me always from people, you know what I mean? Always. But if I can trust, which I think I really have come to a place in my life, that, like, I absolutely hand on heart know that God has a plan for me and for everybody, like, and if I can just, like, sit back, like, and let the plan unfold and go with God's flow of life and not with my demands or my expectations or my wants, like, well, then I will be very happy. And I have been, like, these past few years, like, you know what I mean? In my mind, if you had asked me what I wanted 4 or 5 years ago, I would have said, I want to move back to Dublin. I want my kids back there. I want to meet some man. I want to have this job. I want to do that. None of that has happened. But I've absolutely 100% know that I've been given what I've needed. Like, you know what I mean? And I have to say, like, the first part of my journey, and it is the most active part of my life, is recovery. Like, you know what I mean? Sometimes I was just saying to even Clett, I need to find a healthy balance where I'm pouring as much to me children at home than I am into the women of the fellowship. But me recovery at the first few years, I was so self-centered and so self-obsessed and so fucking caught up in my own self that I needed to work with so many other women. I needed to be sponsoring so many other women. And then I realized after a few years, now you're too dependent on all of this. You need to start getting more dependent on God. But it has shown me, it has learned me how to grow the fuck up, like, how to grow up, like, and to really, like, the constant thought of others being the key, like, and snotting all over the place. But I'd say I'm probably gonna go over time, yeah. But so with my little message, I suppose, today, we all know what it's like to take drugs. We all know what it's like to try and get clean. Like, and I definitely have tried every way, except, you know, the easier, softer way. Like, I've tried every other way to try and stop. And they say it's in the last place we search that we find, like, that God is deep down within every man, woman, and child. And even the Buddha man that was on before me, like, I know me happiness is within. I absolutely 100% know it. Like, and I like stuff on the outside too. I'm human, like, you know what I mean? I do like it, but I've come to a place in my life, especially even what I spoke about, the rejection stuff. I know that when rejection happens in my life, it's God's protection. I know when sometimes girls I'm sponsoring tell me they don't want me to sponsor them anymore. At first, I used to get really hurt by that. Like, I'd wish them well, but inside I'd be thinking I'm not even good enough. And I have grown in all of that stuff. If a man came into my life and has come and gone, I'm okay. If it leaves, I know it's God's plan. Like, I'm learning how to not be attached so much and to try to get more God dependent than people dependent. Like, and it says, that's what I was saying, it says in the book, it's only in the last analysis that we find it. And I have stopped searching. I searched for it in every fucking drug imaginable. I searched for it in the drink. I searched for it in the men, the money, the power, the jobs, all of that stuff, in trying to make myself look better, anything, whatever, like. And it has never given me what I have found deep down within. Like, it really hasn't. So for anybody that's new here, there is no such thing as a hopeless case. You are not that unique, you know what I mean? Ask somebody that knows, that doesn't look too fucked up, to help you, like, you know what I mean? But then I have to say, the first woman that helped me obviously wasn't in a great place, but she held me hand and showed me the way, like, you know what I mean? So for that, I'm very, very grateful to her. I'm very grateful to CA. I get emotional even talking about it. I'm so happy to be part of such a lovely fellowship that I'm sure people do, but that I didn't realise was right there in front of me, like, and all I had to do was to be maybe happy, vulnerable,
and have a bit of courage, like, and I'm learning how to be the woman that I know God would want me to be today. So thanks, everybody.